simultaneously supplying a brick wall filter, allowing only the receiver signal to get into the receiver and only the transmitter signal to get out of the transmitter. On top of that, a circulator is required to make sure that any signal that can manage to squeak back into the transmitter output stage doesn't get a chance to make it into an intermod creating a mixer of some kind. Take some careful filtering and unilateralization and study and shielding and whatever when you put pieces of equipment like this together, co-located at the top of a building. Go ahead with your real question, Joe. That's H-U-L-Y-Y. H-U-L-I-W.
Yeah, just one comment about what you said about duplexes. Yeah, you have 120 decibels of isolation, like, say, on the repeater you're using right now, between the transmitter and the receiver. But if you take that receiver port and look on the outside, going away in the other direction, the isolation is nowhere near as high as you think it is. It actually may only anyway things 30 or 40 dB down when you go out of band.
Go ahead, Andy. And Andy, give us a little bit more rhodium.
I was just talking low. I ran into the same problem with the equipment that I'm using down in the subways, and it turns out the mixing was going on in the generator itself. What we did was we installed a directional coupler between the generator and the piece of equipment that we were testing to prevent the signals from going back into the generator the wrong way, just like you said, and that solved the problem. It's possible that's what's going on. I'm not sure what generator he's using, but the mix could be occurring in the generator itself.
Somebody tried to get in, but it was an extremely noisy signal. We didn't hear a single word. When it comes to mixing, one of the things that Andy has discovered is that fluorescent lighting can do mixing because it is a plasma being struck on each half of 120 cycles. It's being fed with 60 or 20 cycles, or in the case of a so-called solid-state ballast-fed fluorescent light, which might be running at, say, 60 kilohertz, all RF signals that are in the vicinity, that are strong in the vicinity of the fluorescent lighting, will get 60 kc harmonics on them, 60 kc sideband. Andy also discovered that the screen of modern-day flat-screen display devices, like on network analyzers, spectrum analyzers, service monitors, and whatever, the flat-screen display, the liquid crystal display, has an illuminator inside, which is called a CCFL, compact cold cathode compact fluorescent light, and that also is a plasma generator, which can make noise and make intermod signals. So when you're doing some really sensitive testing in the vicinity of moderately strong signals, you would be amazed how many things in the world are nonlinear. Fluorescent lighting, liquid crystal displays, front ends of receivers, possibly in some cases pin diodes that are being used out of their desired frequency range, receiver front ends, and so on. You might want to say a couple more words on this, Andy. It's up to you. I'm H-U-C-B-L, K-2-L-A-W in the tech net.
Just a quick thing, then I'll get back to Joe. The fluorescent lights that are illuminating the subway stations happen to be using a solid state, just like you said, a power supply that runs at a frequency of 25 kc, and the channel spacing on the radios that we're testing are 25 kc apart. So if we had an independent company prove this using a fluorescent light and some rather unique test equipment to verify that that was the case. So that is an issue. Fluorescent light power supplies, switching power supplies are an issue with this. Alright, I gotta go. Back to you and give it to Joe because I know he has a question. Thanks. Just ask Joe what the generator is using on this test. WHCDL, see you later.
We sure will. Everybody knows about solid state, liquid state, gaseous state, and now there's the fourth state of matter, which is the ionized state, the plasma that you have with inside of a cathode ray tube, the plasma you have inside of fluorescent lighting, mostly fluorescent lighting. So it's the cold cathode fluorescent light that's the illuminator for most of your solid, your flat screen, liquid crystal displays, and fluorescent lighting itself. plasma, the fourth state of matter, is the most non-linear thing in the world. It has a beautiful built-in negative resistance characteristic, and I intend to use that for a particular experiment I've got in mind someday. So, what signal generator were you using, Joe? That's what Andy would like to know. The B2RYY, B2RYW, and SECNET.
Okay, the signal generator used for that particular test was an HP8640D. You know what that is. And the spectrum analyzer I used to look at it was an HP8594E.
Now, the 8640 is an old workhorse. I think it goes from roughly 10 megs to 1300 megacycles. If you bought the doubler option, is that approximately your frequency range of all modes of modulation? Is that the right one, Joe? Go ahead.
Yes, I have the snake one that has actually the three options in it, but also there's power protection. Yes, it does go up to like at least 1020, 1040, 1050.
Is that what you were looking for, Andy?
Okay. Yeah, that's a very good generator. It's been around a long time.
Yeah, that 2640 of Hewlett-Packard is a old workhorse. Very respected. You look at the Rosen Schwartz article by Elric Rose, is the last issue or one or two issues ago of QEX, Experimenters Exchange, and he talks about that exact signal generator and its variable frequency oscillator. That signal generator is one of the workhorses that's known to have an extremely high spectral purity. It's a free-running variable frequency oscillator mixed with various crystals. Controlled oscillators, and under normal circumstances that would give you high spectral purity but a kind of warm-up drift. That signal generator has built into it a frequency counter that goes down to the 1 hertz resolution of the frequency counter, and there's a mode where you can press the button on the front panel where after you select the frequency you want, you tell the signal generator, aha, that's the one I like, you press the button, and it locks itself on to that frequency. You say to yourself, hey, is it a phase lock loop? No. Is it a frequency synthesizer? No. It is a frequency lock loop. In other words, the frequency counter is being used as a method of determining any possible error in the frequency that's now being generated. That error results in a voltage. The voltage is fed back to a small varactor diode that's in the free-running variable frequency oscillator, a mechanically tuned variable frequency oscillator, and will keep it on the frequency you set. Beautiful piece of equipment. So it doesn't have the normal residual extra components, what would you call them now? You know what I mean. Whenever you have a direct sequence signal generator, a direct synthesizer, or an indirect synthesizer, normally you have some other frequency components that are being generated simultaneously by the countdown circuit. And this particular method doesn't have it. So you want high spectral purity, certainly consider that particular signal generator. Go ahead with your real question, Joe. B2RYY, T2RYW.
I just want to make one comment about the 8646 white.
Yeah, I think I made a mistake of calling it 2640. Go ahead, Ben. Sounds like you got one, too. And, I have one in my hands at this time. And I bet you over there on Dover Street they got one. You got it, Mel.
We have a version of the 8640 Dick, and some of them, the output is really very high. Like the one that they had for was called the NAVCOM signal generator, 8640D/004. I remember that one quite well because that one had an output range of plus 15 dBm to a minus 142 dBm. And then there was, another one that I had that I got rid of that went from 500 kc to 512 megahertz. That was the 8640D/003. And also, amazing how many octaves that you were able to, have on one generator. I think it went like up to 12 octaves. Go ahead.
Yeah, another nice thing about this 8640 is that it will produce for you almost any kind of modulation you want, 0 to almost 100% amplitude modulation. FM modulation with various bandwidth. I think it's got a phase modulation mode. You can put in external audio that it will modulate in the AM or FM mode. I believe it also has a built-in 1KC signal generator for modulating a tone for AM or FM mode, and maybe even a 600 Hz, 1KC, 10KC, something like that. So it's got a lot of stuff built into it. I recently had to take the one that I have temporary possession of. I had to take it apart because one of its power supplies failed. And the nice thing about it is that, again, Hewlett-Packard, the geniuses that built those pieces of test equipment in the old days, under the early management of Hewlett-Packard, they really made that a serviceable piece of equipment. It's got a whole lot of individual voltage regulators in there. Plus 24, plus 18, minus 18, minus 24, plus 5, and whatever. Each of those voltage regulators has a printed circuit board with a edge connector with the voltage rating printed on it with a light-emitting diode on that particular printed circuit board. If one of your voltages is not present, you open up the bottom of the case, you look at the printed circuit board, you see the light that's turned out, the light-emitting diode that's not lit, and you know immediately which particular power supply to start attacking. And the only thing that fails on that power, on that signal generator, is it's got a whole lot of approximately 1 microfarad, little bitty tantalum 35-volt capacitors, tantalum-type capacitors. And after a certain number of years, even though they were a good brand name, Sprague, they turn into short circuits or open circuits or whatever. The tantalum capacitors start failing. So in my particular case, a voltage regulator, one of those capacitors failed. And a smart person, once he starts doing that service, will just take every one of those tantalum capacitors and simply replace them all with something more modern. I'm a little bit more lazy. I just fixed a particular power supply regulator that wasn't working in my particular case. But finally, turning it back to you, Joe, for your real question. From A2LYY, A2LAW and TechNet.
Yeah, there was a weak signal there. Was there somebody with a weak signal trying to get into the repeater? Over to you. I guess not. Okay, whoever it is, they'll come back. My question is on an 86, excuse me, not the 86, but my HP8594, my analyzer. It has a slight bit of a low problem. Are you familiar with this piece of equipment, Dick?
Hey, you wrote me an email on that one, and I think I am not familiar with it. Why don't you just describe what it's doing, and we'll make some guesses. I have worked a whole lot on spectrum analyzers. Go ahead.
Okay, I didn't know if you had a background history on this one or not. Okay, it passes the CAL test. This thing has an internal reference level coming out of the front panel. You connect the cable between that and the input jack, press CAL, and press, go and calibrate frequency and amplitude. It goes through the CAL test, it passes the CAL test. All right? If I take a generator and put a generator signal in at minus 110 PM, span is at 1 kilohertz. At reference level 50, minus 50, the marker says that the signal is minus 110. At reference level 60, minus 60, it says it's also minus 110. At minus 70, it also says it's minus 110. At minus 80, reference, the signal marker, and then levels it up to minus 105. Okay, you got that?
Yeah, as you start setting your reference level to those much lower numbers, like minus 80, as you probably know, you're cranking in more and more gain and cranking out attenuation at various stages of the IF strip. The noise level is starting to pick up from the bottom of the screen and starting to get quite high. Is that true? Go ahead.
There's your weak signal. Is there a station taking it to the repeater?
Whoever that is, you are 99% noise. I could just barely, with a set of earphones on, make out something called Bravo Zulu. That's all I could make out of that. We get nothing else out of it. Whatever channel you're coming in on, you're going to have to do something to make your signal 10 dB stronger than it is, or we're not going to be able to copy any more than one word out of 15. So The noise was picking up further and further. I hope the signal you were looking at was not going above the top of the screen. Over to you, Joe.
Okay, so I want to remind that person also that if he's out in the Long Island area, to try 147.375 that is connected to through the internet to Glen Oaks. 147.375, up 600 KC, PL 136.5, that may be a better choice for you.
Joe, you better cut back your audio a little bit. You're jumping out of the machine, and we're listening. We're missing cycles of quite a few of the things you're saying. Go ahead.
I shouldn't be jumping out of the machine. I'm putting myself on my HC that's echoing my audio. Okay, anyway, back to my question here. Putting a level in to minus 95 dBm. Reference level 50. I got 95 on the marker. At reference level 60, it changed to minus 90. At reference level 70, it changed to minus 90. It was minus 95. Reference level 80, it was minus 95. I then put a signal at minus 80. At my reference level 50, I got minus 75. Reference level 60, I got minus 80, 70, minus 80, and 80, minus 80. What do you think is wrong with this thing?
Rather than putting a fixed signal level and running your reference up and down, have you ever left the reference steady and run the signal up and down and see what it indicates? And by the way, is it in the peak signal finding mode, and is it really by way of the marker finding the peak of the signal you're putting in? Back to you, Joe.
Yeah, I could do that actually right now. They have to set up in front of me. Let's see. Reference level 15, and it says minus 76. Put a 70 in and see what 70 goes up to. Okay, put a 70 in. Reference level minus 50, and the signal says it's minus 70. And I'm pretty sure my generator's fairly accurate. Let's see. Bring the generator up to minus 60. And we get minus 60. Bring the generator up to minus 50. And we get minus 51, so it's pretty close. So let's see. There's only one point on the generator where something jumped on the analyzer's amplitude level. And it's doing it on different ranges with different signal variations as far as the level. But that's pretty much what I've noticed with this thing, and it kind of is making a problem to come across.
The fact that you're only sweeping 1 KC wide, which probably means you're using a rather narrow filter, if I understood you correctly, that aggravates the problem. I wonder if the marker is sometimes grabbing the skirt of the signal rather than the absolute peak of the signal. I know that when I measure amplitude of signals that are relatively strong, I tend to get a better answer if I use a broader filter and a broader sweep. Back to you, Joe.
No, I'm hitting the marker peak. I'm letting the thing scan slowly. I just hit marker peak, but it really is not moving it very much at all, either way.
Okay. So it sounds like most of the time you're getting the right answer if you leave the reference alone and run the signal up and down, if I'm understanding you correctly. In the last experiment you did, you only had a 1 decibel error, and since you're probably resolving only 1 decibel, not a tenth of a decibel, that's about what the machine is supposed to be doing. You're trying to take absolute signal level measurements with the spectrum analyzer. That's what's going on, Joe?
Reasonably so, yes.
Okay, so one possible way now of looking at things is that previously you were leaving the signal generator steady and running the reference up and down. When you were at the reference level where you got a reading you didn't like, it would be interesting to go to that reference level and now run the signal generator up and down and see what you get. That particular step of the built-in CAL procedure may have an error, either in the way the RC network is set up or the way the microprocessor is controlled. Looks like you're going to have to do a couple more experiments of running the signal up and down rather than running the reference up and down. Back to you, Joe.
Well, so far I've got it on, let's see, reference 50, reference 60, reference 70, reference 80. All four changed in those levels. I didn't go any higher or lower than that. and this is also one of the preamps, they all give me some error at some amplitude level.
Okay, that's a somewhat vague statement. Some error at some amplitude level. You'll have to give us a few more words, otherwise we can't understand what I think is your question.
Well, the way I drew it out was like it was like a little bit of a chart. At rep level 50, the signal being applied was minus 110. I got the same signal at minus 110 at reference level 50, 60, and 70. At reference level 80, the signal now went up to minus 105. I changed the input signal level to minus 95 dBm, and at reference level 50, it indicated minus 95. At reference level 60, it indicated minus 90. Minus 70 indicated minus 95, and minus 80 indicated minus 95. I did the same thing with a signal level of minus 80 going in. At reference level 50, it indicated minus 75. 60, 70, and 80, it all indicated minus 80 dBm.
Okay. I'll throw it open to the net and see if anyone has any suggestions. Give us your call letters right now. K2RIW in the TechNet.
What's the spectrum analyzer to it? Is that again?
8594, Hewlett-Packard, go ahead.
8594, okay. Picturing 8590. I didn't know if I knew the 94. I remember the 8590 had a couple of superiority take over.
I'm trying to remember the model number, the one that I used, where the step attenuator had a lock mode where I said step attenuator, I guess it's really the scan width. The scan width control and the bandwidth selecting control operated together in a peculiar way. And also the knob can easily get loose where you sometimes start slipping between the knob and the shaft and things get out of synchronization. But I don't think that's what he's running into. You're running that reference up and down by turning what particular control, Joseph said?
I'm actually not changing the control. I'm actually pushing the up-down arrows on the bottom below the variable knob, which basically is used to move the marker. And once, if you push amplitude and the top button, which is reference level, if you hit the up-down arrows below the variable knob, it'll simply move your reference level up or down because you're in that particular mode.
I think I understand. I guess the best you can do is to document and know that a particular reference level tends to read X number of dB high or low. That's one solution to operate around it temporarily. Obviously, you'd like to fix it because it's a piece of instrumentation you own, and you don't want to have a whole lot of crib sheet books in order to know how to interpret what you're doing. Most people in the past were a little bit skeptical about using a spectrum analyzer as an absolute power calibrating device. In the past, when an exact measurement was required of a signal strength, people would make the measurement, let's say, over the air or live, so to speak, then use a signal generator, first feeding a power meter to make sure the signal generator was operating correctly. At some level, the power meter worked very well, like minus 30 or minus 20 dBm. Then on the assumption that the step attenuator on the output stage of the signal generator was accurate, you would run it back down while watching the spectrum analyzer screen to be sure that everything correlated. That's sort of what you're doing right now. You're running a signal generator up and down and running the reference level on the spectrum analyzer up and down. And pinning this down as to whether it's the microprocessor failure, whether it's the rotary switch failure with the, in the old days, there used to be fixed resistors on a particular disc of a multi-step rotary switch on the front panel that was doing the programming. I think nowadays it's all done by microprocessor control. I think there's also a CAL procedure built into that machine where you can press a sequence of buttons where it goes to a self-CAL procedure. Is that true, Joe? Go ahead.
Yes, it does have that built in. You calibrate, you press the cal button, you'll get a menu that comes up in one of the menus. It says cal frequency and amplitude. You press that button and it goes through an automated process. It takes about maybe 4 or 5 or 6 minutes to go through the complete process from start to finish. And when it gets done, it passes all the tests, it'll say press cal store to store the data.
When's the last time you went through that procedure, Joe?
Hey, why would it come in?
Go ahead, Mel.
Okay, I remember the 85-90. How close this is to the 94, I'm not sure, but had a problem with it. And I remember also, something was not right with it. It had like a jitter to it at certain times. And I remember talking that time to Hewlett Packard. And the range on that, on the 8590 was from -115 dBm to +30 dBm. If you got near anywhere of the edges of those two ranges, you know, it's in four range, you have four digit ranges, four digit resolution, I think they called it basically. If you were anywhere near the edge of the, for some reason, it didn't work right. I don't know how close the 8590 and the 8594 was, but I remember that peculiarity with the 8590 kicked over.
Interesting to know. Joe, that 4 minute built-in cal procedure, how long ago did you last exercise that?
When I turned on the instrument about 3 hours ago.
Okay, that sounds like it's very recent. I've run out of suggestions from what you're describing. I'd run a series of experiments on various reference levels by running the signal generator up and down. I'd also repeat the process with different resolution bandwidth filters. I've seen in the past a number of spectrum analyzers behave a little bit crazy in the more narrow scan mode when it's using the more narrow filters. See if the process will repeat when you're scanning a little wider and using a higher resolution, a higher bandwidth resolution filter, with or without video filtering turned on. That's another factor. So we got a number of other experiments that'll help you pin down what's going on. Back to you, Joe.
Okay, whenever I bought the thing used, obviously, I didn't buy it new because it's about $25K brand new. I bought it used a couple of years ago. And when I did buy it used, it was calibrated from the place I got it from, which is on the West Coast. And it did work because I checked it with the at the time I used an IFR-1500 to check the level accuracy or at least do a comparative run on the thing to say, yes, it agrees with the generator pretty much up and down and it varies in scan fluid. And it did. It did work okay when I got it from them. This only happened in the past, like, year or so since I've owned this thing.
Out of curiosity, have you ever subjected the front panel to relatively strong signals with or without attenuation dialed in?
No. The front panel says maximum input +30 dBm. I'm not fool enough to even attempt to put that kind of signal level to the front end of these things. I know what could possibly happen. You already said that yourself.
Okay, dear guy. Yeah, I've blown out a few front ends in my time. I bet Eric has, too. Eric's very lucky. He doesn't work around high power equipment, which is capable of damaging his test equipment. You got it, Eric.
Yeah, no, it was just fired to a complete clip. 60 kilowatts is not exactly what you want to put in front of your spectrum analyzer. But anyway, I'm just on the AgileWorks site, and there's a calibration guide, there's a programmer's guide, there's a service guide. It depends upon what the suffix is, whether it's an L or an E, but they have the complete guides available as to how to calibrate it on the AgileWorks website.
And where he does have a particular reference level range, which appears to be out of cal, what's your guess as to what he has to do? Is there a potentiometer in there somewhere that he has to twist? Go ahead.
Well, I know on mine it's actually a series. You have to make sure it's flat. You've got to do it at different frequencies. And if you're lucky enough to have a barometer bridge, then it's really easy. And if you don't, then it becomes a little more difficult. But I've never seen those things drift very far out, and if they do drift out a lot, then something's usually broken.
Yeah, but in his case, it appears is that only one particular reference level, I think it was the minus 80 dBm reference level that was giving him this a few decibels of error. Back to you, Joe.
No, it happens on different reference levels. It happens on 50, 60, 70, and 80. That's what I checked so far. And if I change the input level, the input levels do not track up and down on the screen as far as what it displays from what I know I'm supposed to be sending into the unit. Yes, I can get it fixed by sending it back to HP if I want to spend about
$3,800. Yeah, from my point of view, your problem is nowhere near serious enough to justify $3,800. I've used all kinds of spectrum analyzers in my day that had very lousy power amplitude calibration. And the main thing you and I use a spectrum analyzer for is to measure reference levels. In other words, I'm looking at a signal, and it's supposed to be spur-free for the first 40 dB, or the second harmonic is supposed to be less than 40 dB down, more than 40 dB down. That's the kind of thing I normally do with a spectrum analyzer. Nowadays, people would like to use it as an absolute power meter and an absolute frequency meter all the way down to minus 110 dBm. I think you're pushing your luck a little bit to have that philosophy. I'm not sure you need that very often. Where you also own an extremely good signal generator where you can do cross-checking, you have ways of living with the glitch once you document it. But there's probably ways of doing a recal adjustment which can fix it. In Joe's particular situation, if you owned a machine like that, Eric, what do you think you would do? K2EJ, K2LIW.
Mel, take the mind to K2KEY.
Go ahead, Mel.
Now I'm remembering back some years ago, with the one we had, the 8590, they told me at Hewlett Packard that the spectrum analyzer, that series, if the noise level had to be less than minus 85 dBm, otherwise the spectrum analyzer, you want to read between the lines, went nuts, to tell you the truth, Dick. Over.
Okay. Now, since he's feeding it with a signal generator, and when he goes down to these rather low power levels, the signal generator is cranking in a whole lot of attenuation between this real oscillator and the output port. So I'd like to believe that under normal circumstances, the signal generator is not cranking out noise. Once again, Eric, if you had the characteristic that Joe is describing, I know that I wouldn't be troubled by it, but maybe my philosophy about spectrum analyzers is a little bit too lax. K2EJ, K2LIW.
K2LIW, K2EJ. There's a certain point where you expect your spectrum analyzer to be able to at least relatively tell you what the difference in levels are. I have never and would never use a spectrum analyzer as an absolute measuring device. Basically, I just consider it a fast Fourier transform device and lets me look in that domain, rather than as an absolute measurement device. I quoted the service manual, I'm just taking a look. Of course they give you, making adjustments if a 3353 source is not available. But they break it up according to the 90 series, ensure the calibrate out is within specification, refer to the calibrate amplitude, then zero is from 0 to 300 megahertz, should be minus 20, then to 15 gigs is 0 dBm, blah, 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 so on and so forth. They give you a whole bunch of stuff here. They also tell you how accurate it should be, too. I generally don't use a spectrum analyzer as an absolute level measuring device. I use it as a relative device. Whether using it in a linear scale, which I never do because then the accuracies get worse, always use it logarithmic, and you've got to expect some error. But
Let's see, I'm just looking through the manual here. Interesting box, made up of a bunch of different modules. And there's a guy on the West Coast, if you can figure out which module's got the problem, usually he'll swap them with you for a reasonable cost. I've had to fix my 8490 and a few other things, and generally have not spent more than 300 clocks to get a board turned around, so that's kind of the way I look at it.
Understand. Your philosophy is somewhat similar to mine. Back to you, Joe.
Okay, Eric, as far as you know with these units, if you take boards and have a board swapped or changed, doesn't the unit have to be recalibrated? I cannot get into the calibration menu because it requires a passcode, a password, and I don't know what it is. So obviously it's a passcode, a password you use to open up the calibration menu to change the parameters inside a unit. I can look at them, but I can't change them.
Back to you, Eric.
Give me a second. Let me see what they say. Let's see. The A3 front end assembly, they've got a low-pass filter, band-pass filter. I'm just going through the book now. At some point, they'll actually give you the actual instructions. Give me a minute. Let me see if I can find that for you.
Yeah, I don't expect the unit to be able to measure down to a tenth of a dB to display that kind of accuracy. I mean, maybe it's possible because it is, you know, approaching a type of lab-grade analyzer. It's not, you know, something that's cheap. It's a pretty good performing analyzer normally, but something that changes that 5 dB when I change up in the reference level, that's a serious problem, I would think.
Let me ask you an extremely basic question. Almost every spectrum analyzer ever used, when the preamplifier is turned off and the RF attenuator on the front panel is set at 0 decibels of insertion loss, and the spectrum analyzer is set for a 1 megahertz resolution bandwidth, most often the noise on the screen is at approximately minus 80 dBm in the logarithmic mode. Does your machine act that way, Joe? Go ahead.
How did you want that? I have the span set at 1 meg right now. Frequency is about 445 megahertz. And the market with no generator going into it is jumping up between 95 and 105. That's the noise floor.
Negatory. First of all, you've got to be in the first RF range, which usually is the 2 to 4 gigahertz region. Most spectrum analyzers, the real first IF, so to speak, is at around 2 and a fraction gigahertz. So it'll scan 2 to 4 gigs using its gig-tuned oscillator, gig-tuned filter, and so on. It actually does another down conversion in order to get the frequencies between 0 and 2 gigs. So most spectrum analyzers, with the preamp turned off, are most sensitive when they're set at the, let me pick a number, 2.5 gigahertz. Now, set the scan width wide enough so that the resolution bandwidth filter is 1 megacycle. The 1 megacycle resolution bandwidth filter, I don't care what the scan width is, approximately 2.5 gigahertz central frequency, 0 dB front panel. Tell me, from your eye, looking at the screen, what is the approximate level of the noise power? Over to you, Joe.
What would you like the reference level set to, 0?
Negatory. Can you think about that? Reference level, top of screen. Make it minus 20.
Okay, how about the span?
Band doesn't matter. Just make sure it's using 1 megacycle resolution bandwidth filter at around 2.5 gigahertz. Tell me what your eye sees as the approximate noise level.
Okay. Resolution bandwidth filter set to 1 meg. The marker is jumping around up and down around minus 74 to 72.
What does your eye say is the top of the noise in dBm?
The top of the noise. Okay. Put on trace hold and put on marker. Okay. Putting on trace hold on trace A, the highest peak I saw noise says minus 70.55.
Okay, a good spectrum analyzer will be around minus 80. Minus 70, 1 meg filter, tells me that in that mode of operation you've got a 40 decibel noise figure. By my standards, that's about 10 dB high. That's a little bit suspicious. Go ahead.
Okay. Do you think a particular board has a problem, or is it a problem with somewhere with some of the RF other modules inside the unit?
As I said, a good spectrum analyzer in its most sensitive region, and the most sensitive region is usually in the vicinity of the band that covers 2 to 4 gigahertz. These are conventional design spectrum analyzers from the late 60s to certainly the late 80s and 90s. What they've done with the design of the things after that, I don't know. But at one time I was the engineering manager of spectrum analyzer products for a particular company, and as I said, the majority of the well-working analyzers were minus 80-something dBm, 1 meg filter, is the noise level on the screen, and even that represents a roughly 30 decibel noise figure. You're describing to me approximately 40 decibel noise figure. You're about to ask, what could it be? It could be a different design. Maybe you have a different frequency region which is more sensitive to your particular design. I am curious what happens when you turn on the preamplifier. I'd like to believe when you turn on the preamplifier, the noise power will turn into something like minus 90 dBm. Go ahead and do that. Go ahead.
This is K2KEY. I want to make a comment.
Go ahead, Bill.
Okay. As I said with the 85-90, that there was... Actually, they know that's what you were seeing on the 85-90 when your noise was anywhere around minus 85 dBm. Now, I wonder, I don't know what that is on his, what the specification is on his, but I was wondering, as you approach that noise level, what happens, Dick, over?
Okay, if you expect the machine to read out in a digital display what level of the noise, I don't trust it, unless you turn on a whole lot of video bandwidth filtering. The log IF that's in a good spectrum analyzer is looking for a little bit more than 100 decibels of dynamic range between the weakest signal it can tolerate and the strongest signal it can tolerate. And if it's a super good log IF, plus or minus half a dB of linearity between logarithmic input versus the video voltage output is about the best you can expect. And some of them are a little worse than plus or minus half a dB. So when you get down to the toe, I see the strong signal area, we call that the shoulder. The weak signal area, we call it the toe. The toe of the response curve starts becoming fairly nonlinear. And so another factor is on many of these analyzers, at least in my day, you could turn a knob that turns in click, click, click region, the IF attenuator as well as the RF attenuator. Nowadays, they've automated everything so much that you no longer have the ability to do that. One of the things that drives me crazy is that in the old days, if I thought the spectrum analyzer is making an input, I could turn the knob that literally moved the RF attenuator on the front end 10 dB higher on its insertion log, and if the RF attenuator hadn't been damaged, all signals getting into the real electronics got 10 dB weaker. And as such, every signal on the screen should go down by 10 dB. Well, the modern-day spectrum analyzers, let me drop. I've got all kinds of automatic functions inside. Therefore, when you try to plug in RF attenuation of 10 more dB, it compensates by plugging in 10 dB more IF gain, or cranks out 10 dB or more of IF attenuation, readjusts everything accordingly, so that the screen absolute power level stay the same. And because it's making so many changes simultaneously, you no longer have a clear definition of what's going on when you're trying to search down into mods potentially created by the analyzer itself. As such, because these automatic functions fight you so much, I am forced to walk into the test laboratory with a pocket full of attenuators, 10 dB and 20 dB attenuators, and I literally plug them into the front panel and don't tell the damn spectrum analyzer I've done that, and then evaluate what the hell's going on the screen. I've been forced to do that on a couple of occasions in order to find out, is an analyzer creating the intermod, or is the intermod really real in the piece of electronics that's under test? So, Joe, when you put in the preamplifier in this exact same test, what does the apparent noise level on the screen, the peak of the noise level, read with your eye, not what it's reading out, what does your eye tell you, not as the highest peak? If I drew a straight line across all the peaks of the noise, approximately what noise level is the peaks of the noise? Back to you, Joe.
WHCBM.
Andy recognized Joe.
All right, let me clarify something. The preamplifier with this unit is an external device. There is no preamplifier built into this unit internally that you can turn on and turn off.
Good piece of information. Roughly how many decibels of gain in that preamplifier? When you turn it on, do you see the noise on the screen move at all? Thank you, Joe.
The gain of the preamplifier is rated at about 24 to 25 dB gain. It has a frequency range of 10, I think it's about 10 meg to 2.9 gig. The analyzer is rated at 9 kilohertz, low end, 2.9 at the high end. So that's the range of this analyzer. Yes, the noise floor does increase when I plug in a preamplifier. I don't remember exactly how many decibels it is, but it does definitely go up on the screen. But I'm not interested in that because that's not part of the problem having directly with the equipment itself. I'm not using the preamp to do any kind of test with.
Okay, what you just told me cannot be true. You told me the noise level on the screen at 2.5 gigahertz with a 1 meg resolution filter. I know that a signal you look at goes stronger when you turn on the preamp. You just told me a 24 dB gain preamp, when you plug it in the test that you just did where the noise is around minus 74, you told me the noise goes up. I do not believe that. Please do it again and tell me what you see.
I'll have to go get the preamplifier and plug that into the front panel to do that with no input applied to the preamplifier. Is that necessary for this? Because I don't think I'm funny. The initial problem is trying to get around with get solved with this equipment.
I say it's necessary because the numbers you've given me up till now do not ring true. When you put an attenuator or a termination on the front end of the preamp, just to make sure it ain't oscillating, make sure it's staying 50 ohms, and you take the output of the preamp and you plug it into the front panel of the spectrum analyzer, during the noise test you just gave me, within a small fraction of a decibel, you should not see the noise power on that screen change. If it does, you got some explaining to do. Mel, go ahead.
Andy, go ahead.
I just turned this on and I'm intrigued by something. Who's got an 8590?
8594, owned by W2RYY. Go ahead, Andy.
Oh, okay, because I was listening in. I have an 8590 with the same problem, and I found what the cause was, and I fixed it. It was my own analyzer. It was working fine. It was calibrated, and all of a sudden it started doing some crazy stuff, and I found the problem. I wonder if it's the same problem that he has.
It certainly sounds interesting. Tell us what you found, Andy.
Well, this problem was pretty simple. I looked at the processor board, and I noticed a high amount of excess ripple from the power supply due to a capacitor which went dead. The cap wasn't doing anything. All I did is bridged it with another good cap, and everything went back into cow and worked perfectly after that.
Okay, what were the symptoms that you saw on the screen or in the display before you did the repair?
It would go through a cell test, and that would pass. When I set a signal in, and if I set the reference level, and I increase the signal, the amplitude of the signal would not follow what the actual signal level is. It would vary all over the place. If I increase it by 10 dB, it would change by, let's say, 15 dB. Apparently, the processor is not looking at the signal and processing it properly because of the excessive ripple on the power supply that was feeding it. That's my conclusion.
Okay, tell us what voltage on the power supply. Was it a regulator or the main power supply? What voltage, what capacitor? Give us a couple more words as to what failed. Was it an electrolytic capacitor that became an open circuit, so to speak, and was giving you a lot of ripple? Back to you, Andy.
Yeah, it was on the 5-volt line, and I don't remember, this is a while back, I don't remember the capacitor number that I changed, and it was a small tantalum electrolytic. It's one of those, but looks like a square, it's not one of those teardrop tantalums, it was a square tantalum. I can't describe where it was on the board. Actually, I had to use an extender board to fix it because you can't get in there. And that's what it was. It was one tap, actually, that caused it. But sounds like you've got the same problem. And I'm wondering if that's all it is.
Yeah, how in the world did you find that, Andy? By the way, you said it was a square capacitor. Does that mean it was a rectangular surface mount type? Go ahead.
No, it was not service mount, rectangular with leads on it. And it's not it through the board. How did I find it? Just took some careful narrowing down to find out why I'm getting a lot of noise on the supply line, supply voltage. It wasn't easy, but it took a while.
If this is the best of all worlds, I'd like my 5-volt supply to have only a couple of millivolts of ripple on it. Roughly how much noise or ripple did you see, Andy?
It was a few hundred millivolts. It was quite extensive.
That's a lot. And was it at 120 cycle rate?
I don't remember the actual rate that it gave it. But when I saw it, I said, wait a minute, this is not supposed to be there. I have the service manual. I can pull it up. I don't have it here just in front of me right now, but I can find it, which helps also. Something about the actual is a good service manual, as you know. But I would check that. I would check all power supply voltages and make sure they're right, and make sure that the ripples are right on any piece of equipment anyway.
Is that man a cigar? I think I told you guys a few of my horror stories of what I've gone through in the years when I did troubleshooting on various elaborate pieces of equipment. On a couple of occasions, I chased my tail for multiple days. I'm talking about, you know, 3, 4, 5 hour type days. Chased my tail for a couple of days until I discovered that a power supply voltage was wrong. And the next result of all that is I've come to the conclusion, particularly when it comes to ham radio receivers and transmitters, if something flaky is going on from the front panel or any of the normal modes of operation, and if you've opened up the case, before you proceed, measure the voltage and ripple of every single power supply before you proceed. Because that particular power supply may feed 5 individual stages, and all 5 stages are acting goofy, and you're trying to troubleshoot what you think is an error in one of those stages. It's overly obvious you can end up chasing your tail for a long period of time if you didn't measure the multiple power supplies first.
Hey,
Dick? Yeah, go ahead, Andy.
Yeah, you know, when you think about it, it kind of makes sense. Because I always have a rule of thumb. Whenever I open up a radio and I work on a lot of radios, I always check voltages to make sure they're right. That's the first thing I do. Make sure that they're within the specified specification regarding ripple is concerned, because you know, the analyzer was working fine, I had no problem with it, and then one day you turn it on and you see this problem. So So, if you think about it, what would change, like all of a sudden? I would say a capacitor more so than any other component, because capacitors do go bad, they start to leak, they start to, dielectric absorption changes, the ESR, the internal resistance of the cap changes over time, you know, things of that nature. More so than I would think a resistor. So it kind of makes sense that all of a sudden it's working. I don't think it's an IC or a processor or any discrete transistor. I mean, it's possible. But most likely power supply, and that's what it turned out to be. So it kind of makes sense when you think about it.
Caps dry up, and that happens all the time.
They sure do. Andy, what's your best guess as to the approximate age of a Hewlett-Packard 8594? I am guessing it's considerably more than 10 years old. Therefore, a significant number of those tantalum capacitors are suspicious. What do you think, Andy? Go ahead.
Yeah, this is vintage 90s. I think the 8590s are now in the late 80s, early 90s or so. And the 94, I think, you know, it's all around. They had a series of, they had the 8591, they had a 98, they had a 90B, they had a 91, then they had a 92, and so on. But they're all around the same year. And they, as Eric said, they do go, caps go bad. And I've seen that so many times. So I would suspect that would be my first suspicion of this one.
Yeah, 92 was when the service manual was written, and it's the 90 series, 91, 92, 93, 94, 95.
Okay, so it's the right age where tantalum failures can certainly do it, and a person can spend $3,800 sending it back to the factory, or you can spend a couple of your own dollars replacing the tantalum capacitors, and you know which one I think you're going to get a lot more bang for the dollar. Let's see if Joe has had a chance to run that experiment of putting on the preamp without changing the 1 meg resolution bandwidth filter. W-A-Q-R-Y-1, T-Q-R-Y-W in the TechNet.
Yes, I did. It changes, the noise floor goes up a couple of dB. It's, the market looks like it's minus 74, 75, something like that, and I plug the power into the preamp, and it immediately jumps up to like 72.
Okay. Amazing. 24 dB of gain on that preamp is what you claim. The numbers you gave me before suggested 40 decibels of noise figure. A receiver with a 40 decibel of noise figure should not be able to see a 25 dB gain preamp. Either your preamp is putting out excess noise by some crazy mechanism, like 15 dB more of it than it should. There's something funny going on there. Thank goodness it's only two. You made it sound before like it's going to be huge. But still, a 40 dB noise, the numbers you gave me up before don't quite ring true, is all I'm saying. So, I think the very first thing for you to do is to measure accuracy of every one of the voltages on all of the power supplies and ripple of those power supplies under working conditions. Because ripple on that power supply can drive the calibrator crazy. The microprocessor, the built-in procedure and whatever, it'll drive it crazy if one of those power supplies has got ripple. And some of the measurements it makes, it's doing a millisecond measurement at the peak of the ripple, and another measurement is doing it at the valley of the ripple, and you can get crazy readings. Back to you, Joe.
Okay, well, the next thing I guess I'm going to have to acquire is a good copy of a service manual for this particular equipment, because that's something I just don't seem to have at the current time.
So www.home.agilent.com/upload/cmc_upload/all08590-90316.pdf.
I missed that. I can't write that fast. Right there at the bottom of the paper here. You want to try that just a little slower, and I'll try to copy it down. And then they have the service manual in a PDF file?
adjust. They have the operating instructions, the alignment instructions. The only thing about HP is they don't give you circuit diagrams. That's their way of making you send it back. But they'll give you all the calibration and where the boards are located and what their purposes are. So just don't expect to see a schematic. You'll see everything else. You can just go to Agilent.com and do a search for service manual and manual for your model, or I'll give you the exact address. It's www.agilent.com/right/upload/charlie-mike-charlie_upload/word-all/0859-90316.pdf.
Okay, www.home.agilent.com, and then I just didn't copy past that fast enough.
You know, if you just go to agilent.com, you'll be able to find it. It's easy enough. I found it, so you didn't have a problem. I give it to you one more time. After home.agilent.com is upload, UPLOAD, slash, and the only slash is the right-hand slash. Okay, so it's agilent.com/upload/CMC, that's Charlie Mike Charlie, _ upload, 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 slash, all, alpha, lima, lima, all, slash, 08590-90316.pdf.
Okay, very good. Thanks, Eric. I did copy that all down that time. All right, I'll see if that'll help me out here. If they don't have a schematic, that might be a little hard tracing some of the circuitry around this thing. I didn't know if that would be available like in the service manual. I've been trying to get a good office service manual for one of these things for a couple of months, but haven't been able to find one yet.